Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of a clown.
Your show was better when you had medical questions. Hey!
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, a traditional Chinese medical practitioner who gives me street cred with the weirdo alternative medicine assholes. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, or if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347.
Poo head.
Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at Dr. Scott WM. Visit our website at Dr. Steve for podcasts, medical news, and the stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on the show without talking over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician, assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. Yeah, so I had a guy email me the other day. Oh, hey, Dr. Steve, I took your advice and I got the vaccine. I was like, dude, I didn't advise you to do anything. Stop saying that. Because when he has three heads growing out of the middle of his back, then he's going to come after me.
Yep.
But we'll talk about vaccine safety a little bit later in the podcast. I think Tacey will be calling in at some point.
Yes.
So anyway, but check out stuff.drsteve.com. Stuff. stuff.drsteve.com for all of your Amazon needs. Takes you straight to Amazon. Listen, it's grilling time. Buy yourself a damn Cuisinart grill.
Mm-hmm.
Treat yourself.
Treat
but
yourself.
Do it by going to stuff.drsteve.com because it really does help us out. And noom.drsteve.com. It is time to get rid of all this weight that we put on over the last year.
Lord, yes.
And Noom is a psychology program there's a lot of COVID-related anxiety. My wife is suffering from some of it. We're going to have somebody on in a couple of shows that's going to talk about a new medical device that you can wear on your wrist for situational anxiety and some other things. And that will be an interesting show. But for now, check out Noom, N-O-O-M, .drsteve.com. It is a psychology app that helps you change your relationship with food and a bunch of other stuff, too. It's great. And if you do that, you get 2 weeks free. You get a counselor. You get to check it out. Get to use the app. And if you like it, you can pay for a 3-month subscription. It's not that expensive. It's cheaper than some of these other things that are like $50 a month. It's less than that. And you get a 20% discount if you go to noom.drsteve.com. And don't forget to check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. Do you have any nasal spray up there yet, Dr. Scott? God, yeah, seriously?
No. I failed miserably.
But, oh my God! The Port Charlotte whore is going to have it out with you.
Give her my number. She can just
okay.
Yeah,
I will
her.
Do it.
Yeah, I'll take her.
Okay. All right, Dr. Scott. Have you got your vaccine yet?
I have.
Excellent. Okay, we'll give you one of these.
Give yourself a bill.
So, yeah, I was giving a talk to to a group of medical students. Mm-hmm. And I'd ask them a question. When they get it right, I'd give them the good old...
Give yourself a bill!
Just kind of funny. So, yeah. So you've had both of them?
I sure have.
Okay, and I have too. So we can now take our masks off.
Yes. Maybe. I like to keep mine on. It keeps people guessing.
So I was very entertained by Rand Paul and Anthony Fauci duking it out, and it was really just two different ways of looking at things. Rand Paul was like, you don't have any evidence that people who are vaccinated can transmit the disease. And Fauci was saying, well, you don't have any evidence that they don't. Mm-hmm. And back and forth they went. So it's the libertarian versus the, you know, I don't know, whatever, the sort of more administrative kind of thing. And so the libertarian side is, look, you don't have evidence that this is going to hurt anything. So why do we have to hunker down and do these things if we've been fully vaccinated? And the other side is, well, you know, theoretically... And we brought this up on the show. People who have been fully vaccinated. Oh, by the way, we're talking about COVID-19 in case you weren't 100% sure. fully vaccinated. Maybe they just get an asymptomatic infection. You and I have talked about this.
Sure.
And so even though the odds of someone who has an asymptomatic active infection are low of transmitting it, they come into contact with orders of magnitude more people than somebody that's in isolation.
Right.
So, or that someone that's socially distancing. I got it right the first time. Someone that has the infection and they're isolated. So you figure it kind of evens out a little bit. Well, anyway, now we have the answer. The CDC enrolled about 4,000 people at high risk of being exposed to the virus because they were healthcare workers or first responders or other people on the front lines, and none of them had been infected before. So most of the participants received both shots of the vaccine during the study period. And about 12% of them only had one shot. They collected their own nasal swabs each week, which were sent to a central location for PCR testing. That's polymerase chain reaction testing. This is the most sensitive thing. They're looking for viral RNA.
Okay.
And the weekly swabs were allowed the researchers to detect asymptomatic infections as well as symptomatic ones. Because if you remember, I told you when I was in the Pfizer trial,
yes,
they didn't test us for virus, they tested us for symptoms.
Okay.
So every week I had to fill out a diary that said, have I had any COVID symptoms or was I admitted to the hospital or any of that stuff? They never sent me a PCR test. I'm not saying they should have. I'm just saying they were looking to see if people got sick. They weren't looking to see if people got infected.
So it was possible that those people got infected and they just didn't know it.
Right.
Now, Pfizer every 3 months was checking antibodies. So they would have picked up on some of that. And I haven't heard that they ever picked up on any of that. But for a while there, we weren't sure what they were actually seeing. Was it we knew people weren't going to the hospital and they weren't dying, but were they getting infected? Okay. So anyway, so that's what this is looking at. And the investigators asked people about symptoms as well. You know, fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, loss of smell or taste, that kind of stuff, just like I had to do every week. So this is sort of like the Pfizer follow-up on steroids. And among those who were fully vaccinated, there were 0.4 infections per 1,000 person days, meaning among 1,000 persons, there would be 0.04 infections in a day. And there were 0.19, so 0.2 infections per 1,000 person days among those who only had one dose of the vaccine. And in contrast, there were 1.38 infections per 1,000 person days in unvaccinated people. So let's see, what is that? That would be basically 1.38 times 5, right? So it's 600%. Hang on a second. Echo, what's 1.38 divided by 0.2?
1.38 divided by 0.2 is 6.9.
Yeah, so 690% less, right? Okay. So, so listen, so here's the deal. So this was Rand Paul's question. Do these people get infected? If the answer is no, now it's not zero.
No, it's not zero.
But do we do things to make things zero in this in this world?
I don't think that.
I mean,
happens.
You wear your seatbelt, it doesn't make it zero.
Right. Yeah, I don't think total elimination is the possible. No, I don't think so.
No, it's crazy. But what they're showing is that these people don't get infected. Now, 6 months from now, maybe they will. So we got to keep looking at it. And maybe your COVID passport, which as a libertarian I am not in favor of, would only last 6 months.
Right.
You know. So, but anyway, we'll see. We need long-term studies, obviously.
Yes.
But this is a good study. And these people are not getting infected. So, look, here's my position on this, and we can, honest people can differ.
Sure.
If I have the vaccine and I'm fully vaccinated, there is no reason for me to wear a mask anymore if my mask protects you. You have nothing to fear from me. Mm. However, if I go, that may be true, if I go to an airport and they require that I wear a mask, I'm not going to
bitch about it.
I'm not going to bitch and complain about it. That's their policy. Right. I cannot go to the airport.
Yep.
So any place, any municipality can set those rules. Now, the problem with with the government doing it, of course, is then you can't not live under the government. Like, you know, if there's a bar that requires a mask and another bar that doesn't, then I don't want to wear a mask. I'll go to the one that doesn't and take my chances.
Right.
There are other viruses out there, by the way, you know, puke bugs and stuff like that we sort of forgot about those, but forgetting about that. But you can't choose not to live under a municipality if you live there. So that's an issue that I have an issue with. And you know, the thing is, how would we do this passport thing? Are they going to, you know, give you a tattoo? They give you a card? Are you going to get a card?
Implantable device.
Can it be, right, right. Can it be, can this card be counterfeited? What do you need to get this card? Do you have to show your ID? You know, all this stuff. And now we've got just another thing that limits people. And is this card mandated by the government? Because then now people who choose not to get the vaccine, that want to take their chances, or let's say they had the infection.
Right.
Are they going to have an exception for those? If they don't, then people who choose not to have the vaccine are going to have, it's almost like, you know, the social score in other countries. You know, now all of a sudden there's things you can't do that other people can do because you made a choice not to do something that, you know, the overlords told you to do.
Right.
And that I have issues with. I'm also a physician and I am interested in public safety. So sure. I have a, you know, I always have this internal battle.
Mm-hmm. And people not getting deathly ill and having to go to hospital.
Yeah. I don't want to see any of that.
No, heck no. We've got enough shit to deal with.
So I've always said protect the vulnerable, let the other people who are at low risk, even though they're not at zero risk, but I'm not at zero risk when I get in my car every day, let them do their thing. And when we get everybody up and vaccinated, I would really like to see us get a therapeutic that is a pill that we can just give that prevents people from going to the hospital and prevents them from dying. Then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, I would have a discussion with someone if they have a different point of view that they think is better than that. I just don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
A lot of those folks, and I saw a dude today on the morning news that was saying he wasn't going to take it just because he didn't think there was enough science behind it. He just didn't trust it. Well, and that's okay. But you know what I like to you tell those people is, you know, you're an adult, make your own decisions. But there is a lot of science behind it.
Well, obviously.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of science. So saying
Moderna didn't just start
doing vaccines. No.
Their company name is ModeRNA. They've been trying to come out with an RNA virus for ages, and they were ready to go with SARS and MERS, and then they'd sort of, you know, fizzled out. They didn't have good results with Ebola, but it's ongoing. But they were ready to go because of 10 years of research on
that. Yeah, of course, yeah. There's a lot of great research. And may I add to the vaccination thing? I had hypothesized for a while that after I got my second vaccine, and we started to talk about it last show, felt poorly for 24, 48 hours. Then about 2 weeks later, I got a lump under my armpit.
Oh, yeah.
Left armpit, which I found to me was comforting because what it told me was that something really truly was working. But then, Dr. Steve, after that, I felt, and I have felt better for the last 2 months than I've felt in a year.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And and this weekend, it was interesting, and I brought it up today, but there is now some proof and some research saying that people who have long-haul COVID symptoms that do get the vaccine...
They feel better.
They feel better because... And they're not saying why, but I think, and you can certainly agree or disagree, but what that tells me is that these vaccines identify those spike proteins that are still floating around your body and says, hey, bad actors, kick them out. And so now your immune system has recognized that Trojan horse, and they're going to run it off.
Yeah, maybe.
And feel better. But that would make sense because if that's the mechanism.
It makes sense. And what doesn't make sense is why you still have these proteins still lollygagging around.
And that's what they were saying in the paper, too. So I'm just guessing.
No, that's interesting.
I don't have any scientific proof. But because they can't figure out why people have the long-haul COVID symptoms.
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of interesting.
That is. Yeah. If it becomes like a chronic infection or something. The one thing that we can't say will never happen, and that I agree with people on, if they just go, well, it ain't enough science, but it ain't science, and it's just people throwing out the word science that don't honestly understand what the word means. But there are some people that have a legitimate concern, and I had this concern from day one, is immune enhancement. Now, there was a phenomenon that was seen when they were making feline mRNA vaccines against coronavirus.
Okay.
And when they vaccinated the felines, they when they were re-exposed to other coronaviruses, they died.
Mm-mm.
Now, why they don't, and it's called... antibody-dependent enhancement, or ADE.
Okay.
And it's a form of immune enhancement, and it's poorly understood. But it's a concern in situations when people are continuously reinfected with particular viruses. And with the vaccines that work by injecting snippets of the virus to mimic a first infection. And so... Some of those, like the RSV virus, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine, have been shown in the past to make disease worse when those patients contract the virus again.
Hmm.
And now, these cases are exceedingly rare across viruses, but it was nerve-wracking in the beginning. Because what if we see that? That's why you do phase one, phase two, and phase three trials. The good news with this is there's no evidence of this whatsoever, because we would have seen it by now with the number of people that have been infected or vaccinated and then subsequently infected.
Right.
And they would have been keeling over right and left, and yeah, there would have been a statistically significant nerve-wracking.
Yes.
Because, you know, I joked about all of this in the beginning. You know, I've seen I Am Legend and all that stuff. You know, we don't want those sorts of effects to happen. But, you know, what if antibody-dependent enhancement happened with this vaccine, and 2 years from now people were dropping right and left from what would have been just a common cold at the time?
Mm-hmm.
But there is zero evidence of this. Now, I'm looking at The Scientist, and they talk about a dengue fever vaccine. It says dengue remains the best studied and one of the very few solid examples of ADE. It's thought to occur in communities where there are multiple viral strains of dengue circulating. And while antibodies against one dengue strain will typically reliably protect against that strain, things can go awry when the antibodies encounter a different strain of dengue. Instead of neutralizing the virus, that is, binding to and blocking the protein the pathogen needs to enter the host, the antibodies only bind to the virus without neutralizing it. And this can become a problem when immune cells dock onto the tail ends of these antibodies. That's what they do. And the dengue viruses use these receptors to infect cells. If the antibodies aren't disabling the pathogen, they actually end up helping the virus enter the white blood cells to infect them. And so it's like a Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you make the infection easier. One of the hypotheses is you make the antibody against the wrong side of the spike protein.
Hmm.
But that's really difficult to do with this vaccine, because it only causes the body to manufacture just the, you know, the spike receptor. So we've not seen any of this. This is the legitimate complaint. Now, if someone said, listen, I'm really worried about antibody-dependent enhancement, you know, my counter to that is we haven't seen it, but I understand your concern.
Sure, sure.
Other than that, I'm not seeing it.
No. No.
You know, there's tons of science.
There's tons of science. And I'm pretty sure that Bill Gates is not putting any nanotechnology into the vaccines and tracking
us.
Well,
we don't even have that.
That's my point.
But what would to what end would that be?
Zero. Zero. None.
They can track us already anyway, with our effing cell phones.
With our phones, with satellites, with cameras. There's cameras all over. You can track.
I mean, if I ever really wanted to go to Reno and
have a good time.
Yeah, strip my stuff. I mean, how can I do it when,
you can't. They've got facial recognition.
Well, they have that.
Your cell phone's being
My cell phone will tell on me.
Yep.
Because we have Life 360, so Tacy would get a thing saying, you know, Steve arrived at the Mustang Ranch. You know, after a 3-mile drive,
and then your Discover card's going to send you an email saying you just spent $1,200 at the Mustang Ranch.
So, to develop a nanotechnology that would not be as effective as my cell phone, because there's no nanotransmitters. It would have to be passive RFID. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that would be. So if people aren't aware of active versus passive RFID, you know, active, you're transmitting a signal.
Right.
There's no nanotechnology that we have that can transmit a signal. Well, you know, it uses the energy of your cell. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't do that.
Different kind of energy.
It doesn't work that way. And so it would have to be passive, and you would have to pass under a you know, a detector somewhere.
Yeah, scanner,
so the detector,
of some sort.
A scanner would have to be set up somewhere.
Right.
when my cell phone is constantly telling them where I am.
It tells you how fast you're driving.
Yes. Oh, shit. That pissed me off. Okay, so my... You got me going on this damn topic. My insurance company said, oh, put this monitor in your car, and we'll monitor your every move.
Yes.
And we'll know exactly where you go at all times to make sure you're not going. You know that they're looking here. They're going into a sketchy neighborhood to cop or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And then your insurance rates go up. But... I did all the things. I slowed down. I didn't accelerate too fast. I didn't slam on the brakes as much as I usually did. You know how much I saved on my bill? $4. When I saw that, I said, get this damn thing out of my car. Oh, it made me so damn mad.
They offered one to me, and I said, you've obviously not seen me drive.
Yeah.
I'll be passing on that
thing. Yeah. So, but, you know, they could say, if you don't do it, we're going to raise your rates. And so they can coerce us into doing that.
Yeah, they could.
And, you know, we can go to Big Lou's auto insurance at that point.
Yep.
But, you know, and when they get all of them to do it, then there's no place to go.
No. That would be kind of frightening, wouldn't it?
So, and then it's like, well, it's your choice. Well, what kind of choice is that? Okay, here it goes.
Good.
Here we go. Tacy, you're on Weird Medicine. Oh, no.
She must be feeling better.
Oh, no.
She's feeling better.
Why? I better stop and call her and see what else she needs. Hang on. Okay, we're back. She better pray to the good Lord above that I don't ever die.
Yes. Yes.
Because I don't know how she'll... FaceTime anybody or turn the TV on or anything.
I know. Run the air conditioner, stove.
No, she knows. And she doesn't know how to work the electronic thermostat. So that is true. Mm-hmm. She'll just burn up or she'll freeze. Mm-hmm. Well, she's a gettern, though. That's what we say in Tennessee. You're a gettern. All right. Well, you want to do some?
Let's do some phone calls.
Okay. All right. Okay. This one is apropos to our discussion.
Just calling to comment on the show. I know two people who received the vaccine. One, a young teenage boy. What he's experiencing as a side effect of the vaccine is not the same as getting COVID-19. And I mean that because he's hospitalized, but with swelling of the tongue and throat, you know, almost like an allergic reaction. Reminds me of what happened to someone who I recently came across, a friend of mine who was on lisinopril and had an allergic reaction. So where your throat swells, which can be really dangerous. And also know a friend personally who for 7 years has had an artificial knee, never had a...
Here, let's talk about this first. Serious reactions to vaccines are certainly possible. Mm-hmm. They are exceedingly rare. Let me see if I've got a number on that. Let's see. What they say is if you have a severe allergic reaction known as anaphylaxis, that's when your throat swells up, you have trouble breathing, and they have to give you epinephrine to stop it. They say, if you have that, don't get a second shot of the vaccine. That's kind of a, oh, really? Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Obvious.
So anyway, an allergic reaction is considered severe when a person needs to be treated with epinephrine.
Okay.
If you didn't have to be treated with epinephrine, it's not a severe reaction. It's a reaction.
Right.
And it may have given you a bit of a scare.
Bit of a scare, yep.
But it's not considered severe. Okay. All right. But that can happen.
Yeah.
Certainly can happen.
The issues with it, got the first dose of the vaccine. Her orthopedic specialist told her that it was absolutely responsible for setting off a chain reaction in her body and producing a staph infection. You know, the staph was probably there dormant on the instrument for years and would have remained that way. But then the body has an immune response to the vaccine and sets off this chain reaction where the staph now prolificate
This sounds like a way to get out of a lawsuit.
That's what I'm thinking too, from the surgeon.
I mean, I'm not laughing about your friend, and I'm sorry that they had a staph infection. Infection after COVID vaccine. Let's just look it up and see. I have not seen any.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've not never
anything saying that the COVID vaccine can enhance a bacterial infection. But let's just see here. Okay, I know what that is. That's somebody trying to call Tacy, and it's going through here. Okay, it looks like she answered it. Okay. So here it is, Staphylococcus bacteremia in patients when infected with COVID-19. But, yeah, secondary bacterial infections result in higher morbidity and mortality. That happens because of the damage that's done to the body by the virus itself. So, yeah, it's interesting in that. I mean, that orthopedist is putting forth a hypothesis that is testable. I'm not finding any data here about other people having the same sort of thing.
Me either.
So, yeah, sorry about that. I hate that that is an interesting hypothesis. I would want that orthopedist to produce their source for that. And if there is one out there, if anybody out there knows, shoot it at me. I'm just not finding it. All right. I'm finding lots of people that are infected with staph subsequent to having COVID-19, but we see that with influenza as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Sorry about your
friends.
Yeah,
hopefully get better quick.
Sucks for both of them. I'm still recommending the vaccine. But yes, and by the way, this brings up a good point. Everything has adverse effects, sometimes serious.
Yes.
It's what you have to weigh the risks versus the benefits.
Yeah.
And the benefits to the individual with this vaccine, you know, a lot of times we say, well, the benefit to society outweighs the risk to the individual, but there's benefit to the individual with this one as well because of the high rate of effectiveness of these things. So wearing your seatbelt will prevent you from dying 50% of the time if you're in a wreck that would otherwise throw you out of the car.
Yep.
Whereas if you wear your seatbelt, it may increase your risk of dying if your car catches on fire and the door is smashed in. But that's basically one time in a million.
Yeah, and you're going to be in probably dire shapes anyway.
Yeah, even if it's be nice to be able to get out of the car. I get it.
Yeah.
That's why they sell those things that cut your seatbelts, you know, in case you get stuck in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And I recommend people have those. But my point is, wearing the seatbelt may increase your risk of dying one in a million events, whereas not wearing it will increase your risk of dying about one in time in two.
Yep.
So the risk versus the benefit is much greater than the risk of wearing your seatbelt. And that's the same kind of thing here.
Yep.
All right.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Hey, Dr. Steve, it's Calvin from California.
Hey, man.
So earlier I had eaten a banana and then my cell phone, the Samsung Galaxy, was laying on the table.
Okay.
And when I moved the banana peel was able to manipulate the screen of the cell phone.
Yes.
I can only manipulate the screen of the cell phone with my charged finger because it's got the electromagnetic field in my and my organic being, you know, my carbon-based life form. But if I try to use a pen or a pencil or any other inanimate object, it can't manipulate the phone screen. So why is a banana peel that's not being charged by my hand manipulating the screen of a smartphone?
Yeah.
I also tested it by using...
Also, by the way, you're not charged. Whoops. We don't walk around charged. If we did, we'd be shocking stuff every time. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can charge yourself up if you walk across the right kind of carpet at the right time of year when they're in a lot of water vapor in the air.
Right.
And you can be carry a slight charge for a very short period of time. But basically, matter exists in a neutral state. Mm-hmm. And so that's not why touchscreens work, because you're charged. What you're looking at is a capacitive screen. There's resistive screens and capacitive screens. Resistive screens are touch sensitive. Anything that touches them will set them. You know what, you can work them. And there's two screens that are sandwiched together that have a little spacer in there. And when you press on it, the point of where you touch it, mm-hmm, has a different resistance than other parts of the screen, and right, so it'll register as a hit.
Right.
Capacitive screens don't use pressure to create a change in flow, so we figure that out. If he uses a pencil with a rubber eraser on it, it won't work, or a plastic pen. These work with anything that holds an electric charge, including human skin. It just has to be conductive. It doesn't have to be actually positively or negatively charged.
Okay.
So they're constructed from materials like copper or indium tin oxide that store electrical charges in this grid of tiny wires, and each of them are smaller than a human hair. And then there are surface and projective type screens. Doesn't really matter, but the surface capacitive screens use sensors at the corners and a thin distributive film. And then the projective ones use a grid of rows and columns with separate chip for sensing. So when the finger hits the screen, a tiny electrical charge is transferred to the finger to complete the circuit, creating a voltage drop at that point in the screen. And that's why they don't work when you wear gloves, because cloth doesn't conduct electricity unless it's fitted with a conductive thread.
and the software processes this location of the voltage drop and orders the ensuing action. So I'm getting that last part from scienceline.org. So you can, there are certain styli that are conductive, and then there you can use those.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain styli, the old school ones that you would use with a resistive screen that were not conductive, no longer work on these kinds of screens. So if it's conductive, it'll work, and your finger is conductive, but so is that banana peel.
Yep.
And so that's how it works. All right.
Pretty cool stuff.
All right. Now, here's one for you. You might be able to answer this one.
I'm glad P.A. John's back, because I got a medical question I need to get answered.
Well, he was back for 1 week, genius. That's Stacy DeLoach. And he's we don't know how often he's going to be able to get over here, but we'll try. Anyway, we enjoyed having old P.A.
Hey, it was good.
P.A. shithead in the studio.
Heel spurs.
Pennsylvania John. That made me laugh so hard.
That is
He called up the call screener on Opie and Anthony and said, hey, it's P.A. John. And they just put it up as P.A. John. And then Pennsylvania John on line three.
God, I love it.
They didn't have any clue that.
Love it.
I've got not one, but two of them. One that points down and one that points out of the back of my heel that points up. What's the best way to deal with a heel spur? And is there any food that kind of affects it? Like too much sodium? Will that make one flare up or something such as that?
Not that I'm aware of. Well, okay, you want to take this about heel spurs? Because it isn't the spur that causes the problem, right?
I'll take it. It's not. It's the failure, really, of the arch and the shoes that you're wearing kind of pitching you forward. And the more tension you have on the fascia and the connective tissue in the bottom of your foot, the more tension you have on the bone, it pulls the bone off of the heel, and you get heel spurs.
Because bone is not a rock. No. It is an active, living tissue that will respond to
Tension.
To tension by stressors. Growing in that direction. Yep. That's you know, it, one way that keeps your hips strong.
Mm-hmm. It's
because you're always standing up, that you're always creating bone perpendicular to the stress. But anyway, so go ahead.
Yeah, and that's right. And you know,
and axial to the stress too.
Well, we see a lot of the bone spurs really in the heel and the shoulder both, just because of the way the joint's set up. But I can tell you, Dr. Steve, one way not to fix a heel spur, but to take a lot of the pressure off of it, and it's counterintuitive, but is to learn to get your balance back on your heels. And the way I teach people to do that is, if you can't afford or don't like to wear Chacos, which are the shoes that have negative heels, they'll take a lot of the stress off of the arch of your foot and takes a lot of the pressure off your bone spurs.
Hmm.
That's one way to do it. And the other, I mean, you can certainly go in and surgically remove a bone spur, but in the foot, that's going to be pretty painful. Yeah, it's going to be very. I don't like it. But it, you know, in theory, if you can, if you'll take the tension off of the fascia that's there, or the tendons that are pulling on the bone,
that's the correct answer. Yeah. Now there are some things that you can do at home. For plantar fasciitis, a lot of people who have this will be runners, but some people just walking around will get this heel pain. And it sucks, and it's usually worse in the morning when you get up because it's sort of contracted, and now you're trying to stretch it back out again. So a couple of exercises you can do is the lean, where you lean into the wall and you're on your tiptoes, and then push your heels back down and try to stretch that out, and you'll feel it. The other thing you can do is my physical therapist says get a one of those little 7-ounce Coke bottles, take it out of the refrigerator, and roll it under your foot.
Sure, and it does give you some relief, and those things do give you some temporary relief. But honestly, what I've seen to literally fix the plantar fasciitis is to learn how to stand on your heels. In the way I teach them, Dr. Steve, if when you're standing up, if you can wiggle your toes. Your toes are not engaged. That means the arch of your foot is resting, which is where you want it. And if you're leaning forward, like in big tennis shoes or cowboy boots or something to pitch you forward, then you've got a lot of extra strength.
So you're saying you need to be able to wiggle your toes.
When you're standing. Yeah. Because that takes a lot of load off of the fascia.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Now, when I was in primary care, I recommended Thule heel cups. T-U-L-I, and I had a lot of people get good results with those. And then I went to a running place. And they had this really cool thing. It's a sock that you wear at night, and it has Velcro on the toe, and a strap and Velcro on the shin. And you actually pull that thing up and then Velcro the toe to the shin.
Yeah, no, that,
and it looks uncomfortable, but it will stretch that plantar fascia, you know, that sort of inverse suspension bridge mm-hmm. under the foot, the arch of the foot. And stretching it will then allow you to have a little less tension in it when you're running. The third thing, or whatever, I don't even know the 14th thing, how many things we've talked about. I would inject those with cortisone. And the thing is, for the medical students that are listening, never inject from the plantar side, from the bottom of the foot. Because if you do that and you get a little scarring from that injection, because you're using steroids too, and you've got micro trauma, it'll always feel like they're running or walking on a rock. Yep. So you want to go in from the side, mm-hmm. which means you got to get good at your 3D perception.
Yes, in your brain. You've got to see it in three dimensions.
Yeah, yeah, so that you can get that needle in right where that the tendon, the ligament attaches to the heel bone, which we call the calcaneus. So... You never want to put it into the ligament itself. Mm-hmm. You want to inject it around the ligament, let them walk around and kind of mush the medication around. Because mm-hmm. if you go directly into the ligament, you can actually expand it, cut off its blood supply, and then it becomes disconnected. And now you're even worse.
Yep.
So this is not a procedure to be done by the faint of heart.
No. You know, I do. I use long needles and just come in from the sides on both sides mm-hmm. and put electrical stimulation to it.
Yeah.
Kind of simpler.
Could be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good deal. All right. So that's your heel spur thing. See your primary care if doing the home things doesn't get you any better.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, man.
John from Kentucky.
Hey, John.
Hey, you may have covered this question already, but I've got friends that got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Okay.
And... one of the side effects they had was raging erections.
What?
Stop it.
Please, do tell. And then can I also get that vaccine as well?
Can you
double down on it?
Okay. You know why? It's because the vaccine chart resembles a penis.
I was going to say, did they
have you seen the vaccine chart?
I don't think so.
So Johnson & Johnson vaccine chart resembles a penis. And here, come look at this. See if you can see this. I don't know. I got to be careful turning this thing around. Oh, it looks like an erect penis.
Oh, my God.
Just Google, people who are listening, Google Johnson & Johnson vaccine chart resembles penis. And you'll see it looks like an erect, weirdly shaped penis. This person looks like they've got hypospadias. So that's what Bobo had, where the urethra comes out of the wrong part of the penis instead of out the middle of the Roman war helmet, where the meatus is actually somewhere else, sometimes on the shaft of the penis, which is really weird.
Yeah.
But that's what this looks like. It looks like an erect hypospadic penis. And then it goes out and it's got numbers 0 to 63 and it ends up right around 65. So it looks like a 65 centimeter penis. Right? Should be pretty damn big. But anyway, I think that's where this comes from, because I haven't heard any of this other thing.
Nor have I.
I think, listen, we've all been cooped up in the house for a year or slightly more now, and I think people get their vaccine and they just get excited, and then they get a big giant rod because they're thinking about all the fun they're going to have.
Could be. Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
That's right.
Because I have not
psychosomatic
seen anything else. Yet.
Yeah. That's funny. I haven't either. That's cool. But maybe it's just unique to Kentucky. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Well, we have another question about the J&J vaccine, but this one's...
Hey, Dr. Steve,
this one I can
quick
answer.
Question. I don't think you covered this, but obviously if you did, you could ignore it. No. Why is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine one shot and the others are two shots?
Yeah.
The only thing I know that's different is J&J is a DNA and the other ones are an RNA. Make sense of that, please. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So that's correct and incorrect at the same time. So the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines we've covered pretty significantly on the show. They use messenger RNA, which is just instructions to your cells to make the spike protein. The J&J vaccine uses a little bit different approach. It uses a viral vectored vaccine, which is they take a harmless virus, in this case an adenovirus. This is a virus that causes common colds, and they engineered it to carry the genetic code for the SARS spike protein. And once the adenovirus infects you, basically, they're causing an infection, it enters the cells, and then it uses the code to make the spike protein, and then the body does all the same thing. So it's just a different approach to it. J&J used the same technology to make an Ebola vaccine. You know, we'll see on that one. Now, why one dose instead of two? Well, you may not find this answer very satisfying, but J&J just studied one dose. That's it.
Oh, wow. Is that the only thing?
Yeah. Pfizer could have studied one dose, and they would have had, what, 85% effectiveness, and we would have gone, wow, that's pretty damn good for a damn vaccine. But they went for two, and they got 94% efficacy. Okay? So J&J just wanted to see if one dose would work, and they did it, and it's, what, 68%, 66% infected or protective. And, sorry, let me look. I got that wrong. That was 66% protective against moderate to severe COVID infections from 28 days after an injection. It's 72% protective in the United States, 66% protective in South America, maybe because of variants, 57% protective in South Africa. But it's 85% protective against severe disease with no differences across all those countries. No hospitalizations or deaths in the vaccine arm. So what they're saying is, look, we're not so worried about making everybody asymptomatic. We want to prevent hospitalizations and death, and we can do it with one shot. And Pfizer and Moderna can't say that conclusively because they didn't set out to study theirs with one shot, but they could, and I'll bet you it'll be similar.
They may even have slightly
better prevention of infection, but the outcomes as far as hospitalization and deaths, I bet, would be about the same. But you have to go with what you studied when
You go through dance with who you bring you.
When you go, that's right. Yeah. That's right. When you go for approval, you can't say, "Well, we studied it with two shots, but we're seeking approval for one." And the FDA would go, "Well, where's your data?"
Yeah, no thanks.
So when I was considering getting my PhD in organic chemistry instead of going to medical school, I published a paper in the Journal of Organic Chemistry, and one of the things that just blew my mind was you get these protocols, and the scientist will write down, mix up these reagents and add these other chemicals to it, and then let it sit for 48 hours.
Okay.
And so you have to write it down that way, and then when you reproduce it, you kind of have to do it that way. And the thing is, the fucker went on, you know, did it on Friday and went away for vacation, and he just let it sit there for 48 hours. But now, because they did that, you have to include that in your protocol.
Oh, wow.
Until you then come back and redo the experiment.
Totally different
where
way.
Where you didn't leave it for 48 hours.
Okay.
But now you got all these poor bastards out there trying to reproduce your work, and they're letting it, I have to let it sit for 48 hours. It's just because he literally did it on Friday and then came back on Monday. But that shows you that it's a good thing because you don't want to let it sit for 48 hours and then not tell people you did that because they may not be able to reproduce your experiment if for some reason your experiment only worked because you let it sit for 48 hours. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that's the same thing with this. If they only studied it in women, they could only get it approved in women. If they only studied it in, with one dose, they can only get it approved for one. If they only studied it in two, they can only get it approved for two.
Mm-hmm.
But the J&J vaccine, prevents hospitalizations and
death.
And death. Yeah, that's the big thing.
Yep.
All right.
Cool.
Okay. J&J, by the way, is testing a two-dose regimen, and I'll guarantee you that Pfizer and Moderna are testing a single-dose regimen out there. All right. And see, you know, like Pfizer, their vaccine contains 30 micrograms. Moderna contains 100. You know, they're using three times more, but they're not getting better results.
Right.
But they can't now say, well, or we're just going to put 30 in ours, too. They'll have to study it.
Right.
That is the beauty of science. You know, you just don't make assumptions
and
about
levels
stuff.
And levels of study and redundancy and all those things. Yeah,
no, well, you just can't assume things.
No, you're right. Especially in science, you can't. You can't even assume a double play in baseball. I could just assume science.
Well, that's a damn
good. Give yourself a
deal. Damn good. You can't. Good point there, Dr. Scott.
There you go, buddy.
Hey, Dr. Steve, it's Matt in Austin, Texas.
Hello, Matt.
I have a question for you. Why is it that whenever you get drunk on different forms of alcohol, it feels different? Like, say, a champagne drunk versus a tequila drunk versus a beer drunk. They all feel different.
Yes, it does.
But isn't it the same kind of alcohol?
Yes, it is.
Thanks. Bye.
So one hypothesis has been that there are these things called cogeners, and these are other chemicals that are in the drink that you're drinking that are byproducts of the production.
Okay.
And most of that's been pretty poo-pooed, although, you know, not it hasn't. Who's going to fund that study? You know,
nobody.
But the cogeners can absolutely contribute to your hangover.
Sure.
So red wine, bourbon compared to vodka or white wine for some people, that kind of thing. But there's no evidence that they produce different moods and things like that. So the critical factor is how you drink it.
I was going to say, I've got a hypothesis.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think it's how you drink it. You know, a lot of those things, like you just described, if they're much higher alcohol content, you're going to get a lot quicker dehydration in your brain. It's going to hurt worse in the morning. You're going to vomit more.
But it's also going to feel different, too. You know, when you sip champagne or sip a bourbon, you get a kind of different, more constant thing than if you're slamming a rusty nipple or whatever, a turgid penis or whatever those, you know, shots are.
Those Long Island iced teas.
I've only done a shot once in my life, and I ended up in, I was in Australia, stumbling back to my room at 2 a.m, not knowing who I had been with or what the hell I had done. And I woke up with my wife just staring at me.
Didn't you just? It's been 15 years.
What's that? Since that happened?
Yeah, when y'all went to Australia.
No. Liam was.
He had to be little.
Wait a minute.
Because I remember
Beck,
when you went.
Beck was conceived on that one.
Yeah,
so Beck is 16. So yeah, it was 16, 17 years ago.
Yep. I remember that.
Yep. So anyway. Yeah,
how crazy you were because y'all. What you made her take a separate flight from you or something?
Huh? No.
No, didn't you?
No.
You were talking about that.
Oh, because we were talking about because if
one
if,
plane
if
you
one plane went down, yeah, no. We actually did consider that.
I knew it. My memory is infallible
because we had a little kid and we didn't. You know, we wanted him to have at least one parent.
I remember that.
Anyway, hey, thanks everybody. Can't forget Dr. Scott. Thank you, sir. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, That Gould Girl, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Chowdy 1008, Eric Nagel, The Port Charlotte Whore, The Saratoga Skank, Roland Campos, Sister of Chris, Sam Roberts. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. I got it. She Who Owns Pigs and Snakes. Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Gulf, the great Rob Bartlett, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, Carl's Deviated Septum, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's daughter, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website, at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, and get off your asses and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.